Americans are sometimes uncomfortable talking about class. Efforts to equalize wealth are often branded as class warfare. But growing levels of inequality in America are bringing the conversation to the forefront. Joel Kotkin addresses it in his new book, The New Class Conflict. Kotkin studies economic and social trends as a fellow in urban studies at Chapman University. He told Ross Reynolds the new class conflict is emerging in Seattle.
Seattle area, Puget Sound area, was always seen as a very middle class area historically, not a large number of poor people. And now you're seeing growth both in the affluent and in the poor, which is what's going on in almost every major metropolitan area in the country.
You begin your book by calling the new class order the greatest existential threat facing America. What do you mean by that?
Well, because the United States is not based on a kind of racial identity or a single cultural identity. It's really based on the idea that you come here, you work hard, you can move up into the middle class or beyond. I mean, that's sort of the ethos of the country. And when you take that ethos away, there's really not a lot holding the society together. That's why I think it's such a fundamental problem because, again, America is not a country where, you know, it's not even like a France or a Japan where there's this ancient history and you can sort of lose yourself in traditions. That's not the nature of the United States. It's always changing. It's always about people's personal empowerment and improvement. And if we have gotten to a point where we say, you know, it's really not going to happen anymore. If you're born in one class, you're not likely to move into another. That undermines the entire ethos of the country.
Is that the fundamental difference between disparities we've seen in the past and the disparity we see today? Less mobility between classes?
That's exactly the point, that there's, even in the worst times, take the 1930s, or, you know, when you, and I talked, my mother's 91 and lived in Brownsville in Brooklyn during the Depression. But she said, yes, we were poor, but everybody we knew was poor. And we all thought that eventually we would do better, which they did. I don't think those attitudes are as strong today and as, and so, frankly, justified today as they were before. I mean, I think when we look at what we've had, even in this sort of very late recovery from the recession, 99% of all the advantages have gone to a very small number of people. We have not seen wages go up, even as unemployment has gone down. We have seen a growth in the number of people who are not participating in the labor force. Conditions are very tough on young people. In the new class conflict, I talk about why this is particularly important for the young, that to understand that the engine of upward mobility has to be restarted, and in a major way, particularly for them.
I'm talking to author Joel Kotkin. His new book is called The New Class Conflict. Now, we've always had an oligarchy in the United States, but you write that the new oligarchy that we see today represents what I interpreted you as saying was not a difference in degree, but a difference in kind. How so?
Well, yeah, what you have now, and you're in the Seattle area, so, you know, next to the Bay Area, you're really probably seeing this as much as anywhere, is you have had in the past the fortunes made in America, terrible people, in some cases evil people, but they needed a middle class. They were building homes. They were building steel mills that needed workers who later became unionized. They needed a middle class. Even the energy industry, the oil industry, they need people in their cars driving around. That's really how they make their money. The new oligarchs are really coming out of media. They're coming out of some of the technology industry, and they have a very different relationship. They don't need natural resources very much, and frankly, they don't really get too badly hit if a kid is, instead of going out and getting his own house and getting married and having children, he stays in his apartment, more likely his parents' basement, and plays on his phone all day. That's great if you're Apple. It's not great for the society. So it's a very different group, and they have very different attitudes. And I have a piece coming out in the Daily Beast where I say, at least for the short run, the reduction in energy prices are probably going to make this new oligarchy even stronger in the short run, because their only major rivals are really the people involved in energy industry and manufacturing. And those industries may not be doing so well, whereas as long as we have this asset bubble going on, the people in the tech companies and on Wall Street will continue to do well.
You suggest that although Republicans are often tagged with insensitivity, the Democrats are equally complicit. What are the examples of that?
Oh, well, there's so many. Try to get Senator Schumer to equalize the rate of capital gains taxes and income taxes, which is a big issue in my mind. You know, a successful small business person or professional pays 42% of their income in taxes. And the 50 people at WhatsApp who made $19 billion paid 22%. That you're not seeing the Democratic Party saying, hey, we have to do something about that. If you look at where campaign contributions come, the wealthy are now as likely, if not more likely, to contribute to the Democratic Party than to the Republican Party. The Democratic Party policies, I think, have been increasingly oriented to two groups: their wealthy supporters, which include a lot of environmentalists, and the people at the bottom of the economic pyramid, people who, you know, would tend to be voting also for the Democrats. You know, they call it the sort of upstairs downstairs coalition, and the middle class really gets screwed by both parties.
Well, you mentioned environmentalists, and that's one of the classic liberal causes that you say, at least inadvertently, is aggravating this class conflict. How?
Well, one of the things that happens, let's say, here in the state of California, although it will have absolutely no effect on climate change, even if you're the most enthusiastic proponent of that theory, it won't do very much, but it has an effect on electricity prices being much higher in California because of the need to subsidize renewables, policies that make it very difficult to build single-family homes, let's say, in the Inland Empire or in some of the outreaches of the Bay Area. So housing becomes very, very expensive. These aren't intended to have these effects, but they do have these effects. So I think what's happened is that the middle class and working class, particularly the high-end blue-collar workers, have really done the worst in many cases as a result of very strong environmental policies. I mean, right now, if you go to the Gulf Coast, where I'm going tomorrow, about $20, $30 billion in new construction, lots of jobs being created because the low energy prices are sparking industrial growth. If you get some of the new EPA regulations, some of those plants may not get built. You talk to people who are building middle-class housing, they'll say, well, there's this regulation and that regulation, I can't do it. So, I mean, fundamentally, what you have is the people at the very top, not necessarily conscious of it, saying, oh, we want to do this, which is fine. We want to preserve the environment. We want to deal with the issues of climate change. But they don't really think about who is being affected by these regulations. And of course, the great hypocrisy of being told by people, well, you have to reduce your carbon footprint while they're flying around in private jets. It's kind of a little bit, let's say, discordant with the message.
Joel Kotkin is the author of The New Class Conflict. Well, awareness is the first thing, and the second thing is the prescription for reversing it. What are your ideas on how it could be reversed?
Well, I think one of the things we have to do is when we institute regulations, we have to look at what they're in, not just their environmental, but also their economic impact and economic impact on who. I think one thing, and my conservative friends hate me for saying this, we have to regularize capital gains and income. We are taking money from the middle and upper middle class and allowing the very wealthy, who are the main beneficiaries of capital gains, to essentially pay very, very low tax rates. I think equalizing that will put more money in the middle class, more money on Main Street, less money on Wall Street. And then in terms of the financial sector, I think we've really got to look at why this administration, supposedly a liberal administration, has allowed the people who created the great economic catastrophe of 2007-2008 to go scot-free. No major Wall Street figure went to jail. Every other time we've had a financial crisis, That was not what happened. So there's really very little to stop Wall Street from doing the same thing again. And of course, recently, with the help of the establishment of both parties, they've started to weaken some of the protections that people have on financial services. And I think that, you know, these are the kinds of issues we need to become much more conscious about and begin to restrict what Wall Street can do, make sure that we have a situation where money goes to, you know, is favored more to the middle class. We don't want to have more consolidation of banks. That's very, very dangerous. So I think there are lots of different regulatory things we could do in the short run, changes in the tax law. And I think, frankly, right now, with all our surplus of energy, we have an enormous opportunity to reindustrialize the country, to greatly reduce our trade deficit. And we ought to take that, too, because that will spread to the middle class.
Joel Kotkin's latest book is The New Class Conflict. He spoke with Ross Reynolds.